Thank you, Mr. Harris. Mr. Gratton?
Mr. Chairman, I also want to join in thanking the staff for an excellent piece of work. I support this re-proposal going out for comment. I want to give my slant on this whole question of where this fits into the work of other standards writers. I don't think it'd be any surprise to my colleagues that I think we've missed great opportunities during the last few years in working more closely with the other two standards writers to try to minimize differences. They move much more quickly because of the processes that they've used in rewriting their standards, and we are scrambling, in my opinion, to catch up. But that's the road we're on, and this is an important step in that direction. If what I said holds together, then I would make a couple of observations. First of all, I think the inclusion of Appendix 10, and we've done this before, and I think it now will be a pattern for the board in its standards writing, the inclusion of a comparison with the other two major standards writers, I think it's very useful to practitioners. Otherwise, I don't think we ought to do it. That is to say, if somebody is familiar with working for the ICES, I think it is not unreasonable for us when we come along and say we've got a better product, and we believe we do, to indicate what the differences are and why we have made these changes. The same thing with regard to the product of the ASB. My other observation, based on what I've said already, is we're on a road which I think eventually, and I don't know when that will be, but probably some years off, will lead to our having made permanent or revised, maybe a better word, all the interim standards that were adopted back in 03. I would hope at that point the board would give serious thought attempting to open the door towards serious conversations with the other two standards writers. I'm not an auditor, been here 7 years. I look at something that comes along, if it isn't an inch thick, it's darn close to it, and this is just one of our standards, and I wonder how fast can the profession adapt to new standards as we put them out, but also what do we really expect as a practical matter is going to happen out there when there are three entirely different sets of auditing standards that folks are expected to use in carrying out their work. Whether that serves the public interest or not will be for others to determine in the future. But I just want to indicate the degree of discomfort about the direction we have been going and to suggest that, at the very least, helping practitioners understand their differences and the reasons we think we have a better product is something I hope will be continued in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Gravison. I guess as Bill has suggested, that the world will soon learn that the document we're talking about here is 252 pages in length, and I'm sure it would be possible to ask at least 252 questions about it, but I'll try not to do that. But I thought there were a couple things that might be worth discussing before we go to the vote. First, we've talked about these as being foundational standards on which other standard setting will rest. And that stimulated the people that commented to make some comments about the format and nature of our standard setting generally, kind of transcending this project. And I want to get your reactions to a couple of those things. And first, some comments suggested that we ought to develop a codification, or maybe I should say a recodification of our standards. That's something that I've been interested in for some time too, and I've thought that perhaps if we had a codification that more closely paralleled the ICES, it would at least be easier for people to understand the differences between our standards and the ICES, the differences and the similarities. What's the staff's view of codification of our standards as a project?
Chairman, integrating and codifying standards issued by the board and the interim standards adopted by the board certainly is a concept that makes sense. However, as Mr. Niemeyer has expressed, our existing standards, including in particular interim standards, and other areas in auditing practice indicate a lot of areas where we need to improve audit quality. And so what we have done is identified where we want to go on a priority basis with limited resources. And so in October, we put out a standard-setting agenda which laid out many standards that we felt that we had to address on a priority basis first, the result of which would be to substantially increase and improve audit quality. That is clearly the highest priority of the standard-setting group. I think as we complete that task of getting through the standards and improving audit quality in our standard settings, right, in the standards that exist, I think at that point in time or at some point in time along the way there, we should also look to the integration of standards we've issued and the interim standards that we will have amended and come up with a codification that's improved. To the extent we can start to work on that in some sort of parallel way, we'll think about that going forward. But clearly our priority is on improving audit quality.
Well, it's hard to argue with prioritizing your work in the order that best improves audit quality. As you say, I hope codification will be at least kept in the back of the mind as we go forward.
Certainly. And
another kind of comment we got related to the form of the standards, and that people noted, and I guess it seems to me that maybe over the last 7 years, every time we issue a new set of standards, the format is a little bit different than the format of the prior standards. These have objectives. I think we talked about the objectives at the earlier meeting, and I guess most or all of them have a definition section in them. That's not something that we've necessarily done in other standards. Does the staff have a view about what a consistent format for the standards, and whether they should all be conformed to the same approach?
I fully appreciate the point being made as to the varying formats of standards that we've issued in the past, including the formats of the interim standards we adopted, plus even different formats and standards that have been issued by the board. As has been said here today, these suite of risk assessment standards are foundational in many respects, and one of those respects is that this is a format and structure that we intend to use with respect to our standard setting going forward. So for the objectives, definitions, and other structural aspects and format of these standards are the structure and format that we intend to use going forward. Again, with respect to prior standards and what we'll do about that, again, I make a similar comment about our resources are first focused on our standard setting agenda that's been laid forward to improve audit quality and go through many of our standards to ensure that they say the right thing, especially the income standards, and then to bring together that structure to all of our standards. So the new standards being issued, they will follow a common structure, and at some point when we've completed our process of going through the standards to improve quality, and the other ones, we'll try to get them all onto the same structure.
Yeah, I suppose, I guess that's what you're saying, but conforming the format and creating a codification might be the end stage steps that would be done at the same time or as part of the same project. A couple of things about the process we're using here. These are seven, I guess we're calling them a suite of seven standards, the seven standards. Mr. Niemeyer referred to the fact that they touch other standards and they spawn other standard-setting projects. Do these all have to be adopted at once? I mean, to the extent that, and I probably refer to the relationship with the standard on using the work of a specialist, might it end up making more sense to adopt some of these and hold back others so that they can be conformed with yet additional standards that are going to be updated, or be seen as essential that these be adopted as a package?
I think that these are essential to be adopted together because they work together very well. But let me turn to Keith and let Keith expand on that question.
Yeah, I would say that these standards are very closely interwoven with one another and would need to move forward together. Trying to extract one of them would, particularly the planning and supervision standard, which you hinted at, would be something that would be very difficult to carve out separately because of the relationships that we have, that these standards bear to the standards that we would be superseding. So it would be very problematic to try and to try and do that. What we've done instead is try and lay the foundation for these standards, realizing that there are naturally going to be touch points later on that we'll have to look at and make sure that the standards are appropriately aligned, but and on a go-forward basis as well. But I think these need to move forward together.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. I guess people will be free to comment if they have views in that area, and we can evaluate the comment.
I would like to add that I agree that certain standards, particularly the specialist standard, is one that we set on our standard-setting agenda, and we're moving high on our priority list because there is an interaction between the supervision of the audit staff and supervision of specialists engaged by the auditor as well. So right now, those specialists engaged are covered by 336, and we have that as a high priority on our standard-setting agenda to address in 2010.
Another sort of process here. There's obviously been some back and forth on the board this morning about Appendix 10, which compares our standards to the ICES and to the ASB's revised set of risk assessment standards. At least one comment said, however, that what we really ought to be focusing on is a more detailed comparison to our own existing standards so that auditors would understand better what's changing. There was a comment letter that called for, I'll quote it, direct word-for-word comparisons of proposed standards to current interim standards so as to highlight how the proposal is intended to change current audit practice. And I can understand, particularly in a project of this magnitude, that people might feel that it's difficult to come to grips with what's supposed to change without doing that kind of word-for-word comparison. What's your reaction to that suggestion?
Well, I believe what we've attempted to do with the release, and particularly with Appendix 9 of the release, is to walk through and try and explain the significant changes that these standards would represent to PCAOB existing standards. And I would say that one of the challenges in trying to do a word-for-word kind of comparison here, particularly with this project, is because there are a lot of rather complex interrelationships between our existing interim standards and these proposed standards. So you may have aspects of five or six standards, for example, in the evaluating audit results standard, in the identifying and assessing risk standard. You again have provisions of multiple standards that have now been brought together and realigned and presented in a more direct way. So it's certainly challenging. It would be very challenging for someone to try and walk through a word-for-word comparison and look at it in that fashion. So what we've tried to do is convey the results of the analysis that we've gone through and present what we consider to be the meaningful changes to our existing standards in the release.
Well, people on the outside are looking for a quick answer to that. There's 71 pages here on that appendix.
Yeah, that's right. I guess a word-for-word comparison would be 700.
Several hundred pages. Several hundred pages.
Yeah. Let me turn to another area. We got some comments that kind of made a point along the following lines. The existing standards occasionally use the phrase "should consider." The auditor should consider a certain thing. I'm not sure if we've done it uniformly. We've tended to change that to should evaluate, assess may be used sometimes. I think we've tended to conform more to evaluate now in the re-proposal. But we've got some questions along the lines of what's the difference between considering something and evaluating something? If you're changing the verb, do you mean to change the underlying action?
Yeah, in a lot of cases, those were, I would say, somewhat technical changes. What we're trying to do, because the board has already defined the phrase "should consider" in its Rule 3101 to refer to situations in which the auditor considers performing an audit procedure, some of our interim standards that we would be replacing here have used that phrase in a different context. So they'll use it in when they're talking about considering a certain matter, or considering some evidence that they found, or in some cases considering risk. So What we've tried to do is use should consider as it's defined in the board's rule now, which necessarily means we need to come up with a different word to describe that. So if we would use assess that's in the context of risk, for example. We'd use evaluate if it's in context of something the auditor had found during the course of the engagement. So we tried to come up with something that was a more meaningful word that was consistent with the board's existing rule.
Consider, assess, and evaluate all sound like things that go on inside your head. What are the documentation implications of any of those verbs?
Well, in under the board's auditing standard number 3, the auditor is required to document procedures performed, evidence obtained, and conclusions reached. So you start from that perspective. I think, for example, one of the things we've used in these standards to try and deal with some of these issues is we've used take into account when we're talking about things that the auditor needs to bear in mind or think about while performing an audit procedure. So in that situation, I would expect that the auditor's thought process or reflection would be shown in the way that they document the performance of the procedure and their conclusions from the results of the procedure.
They would list the factors that they considered?
Or this blame? Whatever was relevant to their thought process would be reflected in the conclusion that they'd reached. So I think it would be evident from the way that they would document and summarize the results of their work. So in some of these other cases, the auditors expected to evaluate whether the financial statements or whether the necessary disclosures have been presented in the financial statements. That would be a form of conclusion that we'd expect to be documented in the work paper. So that kind of process is what we would have in mind.
Okay, let me turn to somebody else. I think you commented about in your remarks, and that's the fundamental concept of materiality. The consideration of materiality in planning and performing an audit standard contains a definition of materiality, but we're changing it between the original proposal and this proposal. The original version, I think, quoted from FASB concept statement number 2, I can read a little of it. If in light of surrounding circumstances, the magnitude of the item is such that it is probable that the judgment of a reasonable person relying upon the report would have been changed or influenced by the inclusion or correction of the item in its material. That's deleted now and replaced with the, I guess, more familiar to lawyers quotation from the Supreme Court's decision in TSC versus Northway. An omitted fact is material if there's a substantial likelihood that the fact would have been viewed by a reasonable investor as having significantly altered the total mix of information made available. Materiality is such a basic concept, and what was the thought in substituting, I guess, what you might call the accountant's or the lawyer's definition for the accountant's definition, and what practical consequences do you expect that to have?
Well, there were two things that caused us to change our approach here. One is the fact that the principle that we'd articulated in the original proposed standard framed so that the auditor would look to the concept of materiality as articulated in the financial reporting frameworks. And subsequent to that proposal, FASB issued their accounting standards codification and did not include their concept statement in there, so it causes one to conclude then that the concept statement itself is not part of the framework. So at that matter, then it became somewhat less of a useful definition or applicable definition. The other thing is just recognition that the standard that applies for financial statements of public companies is the standard that you refer to the court's articulation in interpreting the federal securities law. So that is really the standard that carries the day. So we're just beginning with articulating that standard. Now, as a practical matter, I think what FASB tried to do was, in some ways, as you suggested, have sort of an accountant's description. that mirrors, parallels, I guess you'd say, the court's articulation of the concept of materiality. So I think, to the extent that auditors have been, under any definition, thinking about the materiality from the concept of a reasonable investor, that before, which would have been appropriate, then I would, and that they would have been thinking about both quantitative and qualitative factors, then both concepts are consistent.
I think an important point to bring up here is that we did not want to change practice with respect to the auditors with what the definition of materiality is. So I think that's an important factor. The fundamental definition, I think, is the one that the courts apply in the United States. And therefore, by going with that definition, I think that was the most critical decision in terms of making sure that nothing changed. The purpose of these standards is not to change the definition of materiality.
Yeah, that was sort of the point I was hoping to bring out, that we are not ultimately the definers of materiality, that is a judicial or perhaps legislative task, and we need a definition in order to make our standards work, but we're not trying to adjust that definition.
Right.
Which I guess then brings me to my next question. In evaluating audit results, a different standard, and I think you mentioned this in your comments, there's a statement that in order to evaluate whether an uncorrected misstatement is material, the auditor should consider quantitative and qualitative factors. This version of the standard inserts a list of 16 qualitative factors to consider in making that judgment. The factors, I must admit, I didn't actually go back and do a comparison, but they remind me a little of the famous SEC staff accounting bulletin number 99, although I think they have some things in them that aren't in 99, like the cost of making the correction and the existence of offsetting effects of individually significant but different misstatements. What's the thought behind putting that list, factors list, in there, and how might or might not that affect practice?
Well, again, somewhat consistent with what Marty just said, that we are... what we're doing is retaining something that we already have in an existing auditing interpretation. We didn't develop a new set of criteria. We weren't trying to... what we were trying to do is provide information that were in our existing standards that, based on comments, it appeared that auditors would like to have some additional information about how to evaluate qualitative factors. So we're proposing to retain what we have now, not introduce something new.
So those factors were in the interim standards, and we decided to carry those forward. Again, if we didn't carry them forward, something might have been needed changing. So it's all on the same standard, not changing anything with respect to definition of materiality.
Okay, in yet a different area, we've spoken a little about conforming the risk assessment process and these standards to risk assessment under AS5. Can you comment generally about whether these standards would change or how they would change the auditor's obligation or the need for the auditor to test controls in a financial statement only audit as compared to what it is under the interim standard?
We are not changing the requirements for when an auditor changes, when an auditor needs to test controls in the audit of financial statements. We've essentially retained the same kind of flexibility, the same decision-making process that exists now in our current auditing standards and the interim standard that we had adopted. So there are no changes in that respect.
Is there an increased obligation to understand the controls in a financial statement only audit as part of risk assessment?
No, not really. The existing standards require the auditor to attain a sufficient understanding of internal control to plan the audit. So, and there's explanation in the existing standards for what that means to have a sufficient understanding to plan the audit. So we have essentially, we have a similar approach in this standard here. We say that you have to have a sufficient understanding of internal control and to, in order to identify and assess the risk of material misstatement and to plan additional procedures. Very similar type concept to what's in our existing standards. So, you know, to the extent that an auditor is performing an integrated audit as opposed to an audit of financial statements, one would expect that in order to be able to get enough evidence to form the opinion, a separate opinion on internal control, that they may need to look at some aspects of internal control more thoroughly. But for an audit of financial statements only, it's quite similar in many in most respects to what their obligations are now.
I have another 247 questions on my list, but I think maybe I'll stop at this point. Any other questions or comments? Are we ready to vote?
I've got a question.
Steve, Mr.
I've got 131 questions. I will just reduce them to one. And Keith, now directing, or Marty, directing your answer specifically to investors. Why do you believe investors should consider these standards an improvement over existing and international standards?
Well, I would say there are a few very important things to think about from an investor perspective. One is, and probably the most obvious one, is our focus on integrating the consideration of the risk of fraud and responding to that as a core central part of the audit process. That's a very important thing. Some of the additional requirements and attention our standards give to the area of evaluating management bias, I think, is very important, and also to the areas around evaluating disclosures. I think those are all very important areas that one could point to specifically. And just more generally, I think what these standards represent a very a major step forward, at least for our standards, is we tried to stop and think, drawing from the experience and observations we have through the board's own activities, about the things that help drive an effective risk-based audit. So in having that base of knowledge to draw from to be able to assess the risks, to find what the risks are and to have a reasonable basis for assessing them, and to link in their audit work to those risks, and then to also to step back at the end of the process and look at all the evidence that they have, whether it supports or contradicts their assertions in the financial statements, and draw a conclusion based on all the evidence they have in an objective way. I think all of those, I think, are provide much clearer direction or a step forward from our standards.
When would you like to see this process finalized? I mean, we've got a 75-day comment period. I'm totally supportive of bringing this to a vote as a package. But you've had now a number of variations on a theme. You've received a number of comments. I mean, we can put these things out in perpetuity and continue to get comments. Ideally, when do you envision closure from the standard setting division to this project? I mean, I know we're going to get additional comments, but after this next round, do you think that you'll be prepared to recommend to the board that we just vote out a final proposal?
I'll comment on that. Our goal is for these standards to be effective for audits beginning after December 15, 2010, so for audits effectively in 2011. So that's our goal with these. We think we've been very responsive to the comments that were received in the original proposal. We think we've issued a very good set of reproposed standards here. We, of course, will be very cognizant of the comments that come in and be very careful in assessing and analyzing them. But our goal would be to if possible, to go forward with these standards or whatever modifications we might have to make and make them effective for audits beginning after December 15, 2010.
Thank you. If there's no other discussion, we're ready to vote. The motion is to publish these seven reproposed standards for public comment for 75 days. All in favor of approving the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? There are none opposed. The Ayes have it, and the motion carries. There's no further business, so that concludes our agenda for today, and this open meeting is now adjourned. Thank you. We'll reassemble for the closing meeting in 5 minutes.